ಮಜ್ಞಾನತಿಮಿರಂಧಸ್ಯಾಗಿನಂಜನಶಲಾಕಯ ಚಾಕ್ಷುರುನ್ಮೀಲಿತಾಂಗೇನ ತಾಸ್ಮೈ ಶ್ರೀಗುರವೇ ನಮಃ. ಶ್ರೀಚೈತನ್ಯಮನೋಭೀಷ್ಟಂ ಸ್ಥಾಪಿತಂ ಯೇನ ಭೂತಲೆ ಸ್ವಯಂ ರೂಪಾ ಕದಾ ಮಹ್ಯಂ ದದಾತಿ ಸ್ವಪದಾಂತಿಕಂ. ವಂಶಕಲ್ಪತರುವ್ಯಶ್ಚ ಕೃಪಾ ಸಿಂಧುಭ್ಯೈವ ಚ ಪತಿತಾನಂ ಪವಾನೇಭ್ಯೋ ವೈಷ್ಣವೇಭ್ಯ ನಮೋ ನಮಃ. ನಮೋ ಮಹಾಬಲನ್ಯಾಯ ಕೃಷ್ಣ ಪ್ರೇಮ ಪ್ರದಾಯತೆ ಕೃಷ್ಣಾಯ ಕೃಷ್ಣ ಭಕ್ತಾಯ ತದ್ಭಕ್ತಾಯ ನಮೋ. ಹೇ ಕೃಷ್ಣ ಕರುಣಾ ಸಿಂಧು ದೀನಬಂಧೋ ಜಗತ್ಪತೆ ಗೋಪೇಶ ಗೋಪಿಕಾ ಕಾಂತ ರಾಧಾ ಕಾಂತ ನಮಸ್ತುತೆ. ರಾಧೇ ವೃಂದಾವನಾದಿಶ್ರೀ ಕರುಣಾಮೃತ ವಾಹಿನಿ ಕೃಪಾಯಾ ತವ ಪಂಕಜ ಪಾದಶಂ ಮನೀಯತಂ. ಭಕ್ತ್ಯಾಭಿಹೀನಾಯ ಅಪರಾಧ ಲಕ್ಷಯೇ ಚಿತ್ತಶಾಖಮಾದಿತರಂಗಮಾಧ್ಯೇ ಕೃಪಾ ಮಯಿ ತ್ವಂ ಶರಣಾಂ ಪ್ರಪಾನಂ ವೃಂದೇ ನಮಸ್ತೆ ಶರಣಾರವಿಂದಂ. ವೃಂದೇ ನಮಸ್ತೆ ಶರಣಾರವಿಂದಂ. ಶ್ರೀ ಜಗನ್ನಾಥ ಬಲದೇವ ಸುಭದ್ರಿ ಕೀ ಜಯ. ಶ್ರೀ ಗೌರ ನಿತ್ಯಾನಂದ ಕೀ ಜಯ. ಹರಿ ಕೃಷ್ಣ ದಂದವಾದ. ವೆಲ್ಕಮ್ ಟು ಆಲ್ ಆಫ್ ಯು. ಥ್ಯಾಂಕ್ ಯು ಸೋ ಮಚ್ ಫಾರ್ ಜಾಯ್ನಿಂಗ್ ಅಸ್. ಯು ಕ್ಯಾನ್ ಕಮ್ ಕ್ಲೋಸರ್ ಇಫ್ ಯು ವಾಂಟ್. ಸೋ ಅಸ್ ನಮ್ಮ ರಾಸಪ್ರಭು ಜಸ್ಟ್ ಮೆನ್ಷನ್ಡ್, ಫಸ್ಟ್ ಆಫ್ ಆಲ್ ಪೀಪ್ ಗ್ರಾಟಿಟ್ಯೂಡ್ ಟು ಶ್ರೀ ಗದಾಧರ ಪ್ರಭು, ಹಿಸ್ ಫ್ಯಾಮಿಲಿ ಫಾರ್ ವೆಲ್ಕಮಿಂಗ್ ಮೀ ಅಂಡ್ ಫೀಲ್ ಬೆನಿ ಆನರ್ಡ್ ಅಂಡ್ ಫಾರ್ಚುನೇಟ್ ಟು ಬಿ ಹಿಯರ್ ವಿತ್ ಆಲ್ ಆಫ್ ಯು. And the idea today is to share a few thoughts on the topic of family life, right? A few years ago, we gave a lecture on a similar topic. So it seems that Namrasa Prabhu liked it. So now he has insisted for me to talk again on the glories of Grihastha Ashram, so to say. So we'll talk about today about that. I've titled the lecture from the other side, trying to make a rhetorical question. Like, is family life truly mundane? Because sometimes we may hear something like that. So I will try to demystify such a thought today. As a sannyasi. Trying to use my sannyasi ashram to establish the Grihastha ashram in its proper place and glory as well. Right? So when we talk Harikatha, there are different forms of Harikatha, different varieties of Harikatha. We can talk Lila Katha, Nam Katha, Guna Katha, Prabhupada Katha, different ways of engaging Harikatha. And I would say that one of those is what we are trying to present today. And it's a Harikatha in which we are trying to clarify misconceptions, in which many times certain ideas about certain things have been established. It's not always, but in some of us, we are trying to shed light on how to understand properly certain issues. Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur will say that one of the most delicate anarthas to eradicate is tattva bibhrama, which means to be confused and bewildered about what is what. So it's very important that we have a clear understanding of what is what, including Grihastha Ashram. As Namrasa Prabhu said, 99.9% of all the Gaudiya Vaishnava community will end in the Grihastha Ashram, mostly. Sometimes some sannyasis end up in that Grihastha Ashram. But that's another conversation. But my point is, it's important that we address that properly, right? And as Namrasa Prabhu mentioned, I like to always address this from the concept that I used to invoke called Radical Personalism. That's the name of my last book also. And radical personalism is for me another name of Vaishnavism, Gaudiya Vaishnavism, because our tradition is radically personal. We worship the supreme personality of Godhead. That's very personal, the supreme personality of Godhead. So we are expected to exhibit the same degree of personalism in how we relate to each other, in how we relate to God, in how we relate to everyone, to be radically personal. So to say, to the root. Radically means to the root. So But many times we are personalists, but we relate to ourselves or to certain things in pretty impersonal ways. So that's not very becoming. That's really unbecoming. In the name of personalism, to be embodying impersonalism in how we treat each other, or sometimes in how we become indifferent to each other, or we overemphasize, for example, renunciation. And this is a renunciant telling you that. Sometimes I've seen, not always again, but in some places, we are overemphasizing renunciation as a goal in life instead of bhakti. Renunciation, yes, please. Renunciation on top of bhakti. Mm-hmm. Sometimes we understand transcendence in terms of rejection. Sometimes I think transcending something means to reject something. Or sometimes we understand transcendence as indifference or leaving behind, instead of transcendence being seen as integration, wholeness, healing, humanity, in connection with spirituality. We don't want spirituality divorced from humanity, because again, Krishna is in his Naralila. Naralila means fully human, fully divine, fully human lila. So we want to enter into that with our whole humanity, not the half-baked humanity. So in this connection, I'd like to talk today about the family life and whether family life is truly mundane, as some people sometimes like to say. And of course, I'm giving you the trailer that no, that's not the case, in case you were wondering what will Mara said about that. And to be honest, I've heard that a few times, whether family life is mundane or whether family life is inferior to renounced life. Grihasthas are not as advanced as sannyasis, and all the type of things that I will try to respectfully deconstruct today. And many times the root cause of this misunderstanding is that we take that the world of matter, the material energy, is something bad. And whatever seems to be related with material energy, we take it as bad as well. No. So we may think like, oh, if material energy is bad, this world is bad, this body is bad, physical body, mental body, our emotions are bad, family life is bad. And nothing of that is true, actually. Material energy is the Shakti of Bhagavan. It's an energy of Krishna, dedicated to the service of Krishna. The Bhagavatam, that's clearly stated. Maya Shakti, material energy, is serving God. Serving God probably way better than how we are serving him. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur comments that Sanatana Goswami similarly mentions Maya Shakti, material energy, is the greatest devotee of Krishna. So if we criticize the material energy, we are making Vaishnavi aparat. Just in case. I don't want to make anyone neurotic, but we have to learn how to relate to material energy. Material energy is not bad. It's the bad thing is how we approach material energy. It has nothing to do with material energy in itself. If we learn to connect with matter properly, everything can be used in service to Krishna. So, but the point is, when we make this rude mistake, material energy is bad, then we apply that to many other things. This planet is bad, this body, this emotion, this family life, and we start to reject. But again, material energy is sacred if properly understood. Prabodhananda Saraswati will say, Bhishman Purna Sukhayati. The whole world is an abode of joy. Oh, that's pretty interesting. If you have the proper eyes to see, everything is. Brahma Samhita says Krishna is in every atom. Imagine. God is, every atom is an embassy of God. So how can we say this material energy is bad? Every atom is hosting the divine. The vision of the Uttam Bhagavat, the highest devotee, is God is everywhere. Everything is in him, he is in everything. Yumam pasyati sarvatra sarvam chamai pasyati. I heard that the two of you know the Bhagavad Gita by heart, right? Sorry. It's not Rasa's fault. So if I'm mispronouncing any verse, please correct me. That's why I get the 630. If you don't believe me, you can ask them. They know the proper number better than me. So everything is sacred if you have the eyes to see. You know, what the Shastra is condemning, so to say, it's not this world, it's not this body, it's not this planet, it's not this family life. What we are condemning, so to say, is the self-centered perspective, the selfish perspective, the exploitative mood. That's what needs to be adjusted. That's it. If the mood is proper, there's nothing to reject, basically. As I say a few times when I met the Sri Radhana Maharaj last year in Alachua, that I went to give him a copy of my book. Just I thought, okay, 10 minutes with Maharaj, I'll give a copy, I want to take his time. And we ended up talking like 4 hours and a half. It's like, Maharaj, tell me your life story. I have a few things to share. So we had a very beautiful conversation there. At one point, he shared one story with Srila Prabhupada when one devotee came to Prabhupada and asked him and told him, like, Srila Prabhupada, for your sake, I'm willing to reject everything. Mm-hmm. It was pretty negatively oriented, the approach. Mm-hmm. I'm willing to reject everything. And Prabhupada chuckled and said, the only thing you need to reject is the idea that you need to reject something. That you have to reject. The idea of having to reject. But apart from that, you don't need to reject anything. Everything can be, in the words of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, everything can be potential paraphernalia to be offered to Krishna. He will give this beautiful example of the Arctic plate. We have incense, lamp, water. The five main elements are present there: earth, water, fire, ether, and so on. So he says, when we offer Arctic and offer these elements, we are offering these five main elements of which the whole world is made. So the Arctic plate is kind of the whole world in one plate, symbolizes the whole world. So what do we do with this whole world? We offer at the feet of, we connect it with its source. So basically that's the idea. Now the whole world is like a big Arctic plate. Everything is offerable to Bhagavan. That's basically the idea. If you have the right perspective, we don't need to reject anything. Nothing is mundane. So I'm saying all this why? Because I'm trying to clarify. Therefore, family life is not necessarily mundane. Of course, you can live family life in a mundane, entangled way, as you can live brahmachari sannyasi life in a mundane, entangled way. You follow? I mean, we know examples of both. And we know beautiful examples of both as well. So it has nothing to do with the ashram. So I'd like to establish, before delving into a few topics, I'd like to just make it clear what I'd like to. Hopefully you can, after the lecture, leave this place with these ideas clear. No? First one, that family life is not inferior to life in a monastic order, so to say, in an ashram. Both are ashram. Grihastha, ashram. Sannyas, ashram. Brahmachari, ashram. Ashram means shelter. So all of them are shelter. If we approach them properly, all of them are shelter. Don't need to leave the shelter, basically. If it's shelter, why are you thinking about running up from that? Mm-hmm. Also, again, in that connection, if a devotee is living at his or her house, that devotee is not less advanced than someone living in the monastery. It all depends on your inner advancement. It's not depending on where you're living or the color of your cloth or the ashram you belong. Mm-hmm. And just in case if I didn't make it clear enough, a sannyasi or a brahmachari is not necessarily more advanced than a grihastha. It can happen in some cases. It may not happen in other cases. Not like a rule. And I'm a sannyasi, so I'm telling you that. Not necessarily a sannyasi is higher by being merely a sannyasi. And in fact, our tradition is not about renunciation. Our path is not vairagya or jnana, renunciation, it's bhakti. Srila Prabhupada once will say, Krishna consciousness is not the science of detachment or renunciation, it's the science of attachment. How to attach ourselves to Krishna. In fact, in the list of angas of bhakti that Rupa Goswami gives in Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, 64 angas, you will never see there brahmacharya, sannyas, renunciation. It's not there. So it's not part, like crucial aspect of our tradition. And therefore, by conclusion, you can not only be a devotee at home, you can attain perfection living in family life. You don't need to become a renunciate at certain specific point, okay? Some private joke we had at the court. On the old times, non-Rasa fanatic 20 years ago.
That's, I remember this.
Okay, we have witnesses here. So someone doesn't believe me, you can go to. Anyhow, so I'd like to begin by defining, we are talking about renunciation and family life and so on and stuff. So what's renunciation for us? In our tradition, Srila Rupa Goswami describes renunciation positively and negative. What's real renunciation? Yukta Vairagya. What's false renunciation? Falgu Vairagya. So this is Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. So when he defines Yukta Vairagya, or real renunciation, he says, Anashakta Sivisayam Yathartam Upayunjata Nirvandha Krishna Sambandhi Yuktam Vairagya Mochite. What does it mean? This basically means, he's saying, when you are seeing everything in connection to Krishna, Nirbandha is Krishna Sambandhi, and you are not attached to things considering you the center, that's proper renunciation. So it's interesting. He's describing proper renunciation means to renounce the idea that I'm the center, that things revolve around me and exist for my pleasure. When you renounce to that, that's the renunciation we are talking about. That's it. That's proper. To see everything in connection to Krishna. Renunciation. And prapanchi kataya bhudya hari sambandhu vasuna mumokshu viparityago falgum vairagyam katyate. And the opposite is falgu vairagyas, false renunciation, which basically means to reject things superficially without engaging them in Krishna's service. So you can become a renounced person or a renunciant and just conceive renunciation in terms of indifference and rejection. And Rupa Swami says that's false renunciation. Real renunciation is you accept everything in Krishna's service. There's nothing to reject, what we were saying before, Prabhupada. So the only thing you need to reject is the idea that you think you have to reject something. In our tradition, we are not about rejecting. It's more rejecting the wrong mentality, the wrong ambition. When we see everything connected to Krishna, that's it. The actual problem is that we don't see everything connected to Krishna. Bhayam dutiya avinibeshata shyat, says the Bhagavad. When we have a separatistic, you say in English? Vision
separatist.
Of, yeah, separatist vision, seeing dutiya instead of oneness, you see separatist thing. This, instead of seeing Krishna in the center, everything revolves around you. We have this dualistic vision, fear arises. And that's what we call material life. The unfolding of that is the material drama, so to say. When we acknowledge Bhagavan is in the center and all of us, everything, every atom is connected to him, that's it. There's nothing to reject at that point. So all of the what I've just mentioned, this definition of false and real renunciation, hopefully makes it clear. You don't need to live family life to practice bhakti or to attain perfection in bhakti. Because imagine this, if we will say, okay, in order to practice bhakti fully, I need to leave my home. That's, in one sense, an insult to bhakti. You're limiting the power of bhakti. You are limiting the reach of bhakti. No, bhakti cannot reach me at home. I need to become a sannyas to be fully able to embrace bhakti fully. Indirectly, you are offending bhakti by saying that. You follow? You are saying bhakti doesn't have the power to reach me at home. Bhakti needs me outside of my house, so to say, to be fully effective. That's not how it works. Bhakti is the most powerful shakti, the most powerful potency. So bhakti can be, we can practice bhakti at home and we can attain perfection at home. And not only that, one more idea that also I like to mention is that when we attain perfection, that we were talking about that today with Dinabandha, when we attain perfection in bhakti in our tradition, generally the goal to attain in our particular school is, let's give an example, in Vrindavan, to serve Radha and Krishna in Golok Vrindavan. When you attain that perfection, nobody will be a renunciant there. That's an important point. No? Even if I'm a renunciant here, like me, I'm a sannyasi here. 10 years brahmachari, 50 years sannyasi. I have to be careful not to get too attached to this saffron clause, because in Golok Vrindavan, I won't be a sannyasi. It's not my plan to be a sannyasi in Golok Vrindavan. Doesn't fit the lila. Sannyasi in Golok Vrindavan just come to do some mischiefs, and Durbasa Muni, everyone is terrified, sannyasi is coming, my gosh, not putting a whole lila in anxiety. I don't want to be that sannyasi. We already have Durbasa Muni for that, right? So that's also important. Like, not only, again, family life is favorable for bhakti, you can attain perfection from family life, but in perfection, when you attain perfection, you will be in family life. You won't be a sannyasi in Golok Vrindavan. So better we get accustomed, we make peace with family life, because that will accompany us eternally in the lila. So that's an important point. So the bhakti tradition is not about asceticism, about renunciation. Again, renunciation is not an anga of bhakti, no? Like it is in other traditions. Like if you go to Advaita Vedanta, Sankaracharya's lineage, they clearly say if you want to attain mukti, the goal for them, you have to become a sannyasi. Bas. Period. They put it like that. If you don't become a sannyasi, you can obtain the goal. That's not our tradition. So I'm contrasting, so we also make it clear the differences between one and the other.
I have a question. Should I ask during the conversation? Should I wait?
Please, you are the boss here, so you can do whatever you want.
So I know you're paying a lot of emphasis on rejection, right? So how do I see rejection when it comes to, like, you know, when we are living in this medieval, there are obviously things which we should not be doing, right? Like, there are vices, certain vices, there's certain action which we should be abstaining from, right? So that's also rejection. How do we reconcile, like, what you're saying with these things which we have to reject as a part of our, you know, for the principle and other things? How do you reconcile those?
Yeah, I would say that mostly the rejection part is, my main point is that the rejection is kind of a byproduct of the acceptance of what's favorable. Like, for example, when we speak about Saranagati, first limb of Saranagati is Anukulya Sankalpa, and then comes Pratikulya Sevarjana, which means accept what's favorable for bhakti, and then comes reject what's unfavorable. Like implying, if you accept what's favorable, naturally, well, you will avoid what's not favorable.
It's like a byproduct.
Exactly. Exactly. Like the Bhagavatam say, Vasudeva Bhagavati Bhakti Yoga Prayogita Janayati Asu Vairagyam Gyanam Chayadahaitukam. Say, first, offer bhakti to Vasudeva, offer bhakti yoga to Krishna, and knowledge and renunciation comes as a byproduct.
So if we emphasize on accepting and surrender, then rejection will become a byproduct.
Basically, that's
going to be focusing on rejection to begin with. Basically.
Exactly. We should have a positive-oriented practice. First, something positive, and whatever needs to be avoided, so to say, comes naturally as a byproduct. Mm-hmm. Instead of, okay, my practice is about not doing certain things. Now, sometimes I ask that to the devotees when we were talking, I don't know, about the four regulative principles, and ask them, so which are the four regulative principles? Or know this, know this, know this, and know that. And it's like, that sounds very negative. No? What do you do in your practice? I don't do this, I don't do this. No, but what do you do? I don't do this, and I don't do this. It's describing negative terms. No? So a better way to put it is, instead of saying, I don't know, no meat eating, it's to be as compassionate as I can. That's the actual essence of that principle. Because I can be vegetarian and be pretty violent in so many other ways. But the principle there is ahimsa. So it's to, and ahimsa is not only non-violent, still is negative, but compassionate, merciful. So I think it's important that we learn to conceive our practice always starting in a positive in terms. So yeah, that will be the point of quote-unquote rejection, right? It's clear?
Yeah, thank you.
Okay, thank you. So So again, our tradition is, and this is very interesting, in the very word, for example, in Sanskrit, for one of the words for renunciation or detachment is vairagya, right? Vairagya. But vairagya is also means vairagya. Ragya comes from raga, and raga means attachment. And vai means a very special type. So vairagya translates as detachment, but etymologically means a very special type of attachment. Like implying when you have a special type of attachment, detachment naturally follows. Param drishya nivartante, Krishna says in the Gita. When you taste a higher taste, whatever is not a higher taste naturally, I don't even have to reject it. That's the thing. It's like, no, thank you. No. I don't even to make an effort to, because I'm relishing something superior. So it's interesting how Sanskrit works in this case. Vairagya means detachment, but implies a very special attachment that creates a natural detachment. To imply detachment doesn't have to be like a main thing, that I'm mostly engaged in detaching myself from things, but I'm mostly engaged in attaching myself to Krishna, and everything else follows naturally. So again, bhakti is independent. In the Bhagavatam, that's clearly mentioned over and over again, that bhakti doesn't depend on ashram, on renunciation. No? In the definition of bhakti that Rupa Goswami gives, he says, anyavilasita sunyam jnana karma adi anabritam nukulena krishnana shilanam bhakti dottam. So he says bhakti doesn't have to be mixed with jnana or karma. So if you think that sannyas fosters bhakti, that's karma anabritam. That's karma abritam. That's bhakti mixed. Thinking that by certain ashram, by entering certain ashram, my bhakti will be better. That's not correct. That's not the idea of bhakti we're receiving. Bhakti is beyond that. Krishna says in the Gita, sarva dharma parityaja. No. Transcend dharma and surrender to me. And by Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur comments, when he says, transcend dharma means varna ashram dharma. With this, we are not saying neglect that, but saying bhakti is above that. Bhakti is beyond considerations of in which ashram you are. Your ashram doesn't determine your bhakti. I'm trying to say the same thing from different perspectives, just to pound the post as clearly as possible. There's one verse I'd like to refer to from the Bhagavatam, one of my favorite verses among hundreds of favorite verses in the Bhagavatam, from the Brahma Stuti, which is the prayers of Brahma after the Brahma Vimohan Lila, chapter 14 of the 10th canto. And then Brahma is saying to Krishna, tavad ragada yastinas tavad kad griham griham tavam mohan grinigado yavat krishna nate jana. This is a very nice verse. Indirectly, he's saying how you can practice bhakti from family life in a very beautiful way. No. Brahma is saying there to Krishna, oh my Lord, he says, until people become your devotees, and don't forget this part because that puts the rest of the verse in context. Until people become your devotees, their material attachments and desires remain thieves, their homes remain prisons, and their affect and their feelings for other people remain foot shackles. But until and unless they become devotees. Because sometimes we forget that part and say, yeah, your house is a prison, your affection for your family are foot shackles, and you are completely in the dark. Well, no, don't forget that line that puts everything else in context. That speaks what you forgot God when you are living a life where you are getting more and more entangled. And that can happen here, in family life or in any other ashram as well. Vishwanath Chakravarti, I like to read Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur's brief section of one comment, because he makes clear what's the point of this verse. In case you feel that I'm stretching the meaning. He says, in that way, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says, in that way, the same home which was formerly a prison cell created by favorable and unfavorable karmic reactions becomes for the devotee a place filled with service to God by hearing and chanting his glories and a host of other activities meant to please the Absolute. These activities carry one to God's eternal abode. So he concludes on that point. He's saying a home can be a prison. Any other place can be a prison if we don't have proper consciousness. But that same home centered around Krishna can, by engaging in devotional activities, he says, those activities carry you to the eternal abode. Basically, it's implying you can attain that eternal abode from home. That's also stated in the Srimad Bhagavatam, 7th canto, chapter 15. Varnashram discussion there, and especially about the duties for a married person. And the conclusive verse of that chapter, which is verse 67, and I'm giving specific reference in case you still don't believe me all the things, just in case. Bhagavatam says, if a person worships the Lord with devotion, though he remains at home, he attains the supreme. So again, I'm giving Shastra Praman, evidence from the scriptures about how it's possible to attain perfection from home. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur comments there also, the subject is concluded. If one is a householder and worships the Lord, he can attain the supreme. He puts, the subject is concluded, like, bas, no more arguments in this connection. So again, bhakti is not about renouncing anything, but accepting everything in the service of Bhagavan. I would say that's why Mahaprabhu will say, of course, Mahaprabhu was a sannyasi at one point, Sri Krishna Chaitanya. He received the mantra from Kesha Bharati. But also, interestingly, he will say, Naham vipro na chanarabhatin na piva yushana sudro naham varni na chagrihapatin na vanasto yatir bha. I'm not a sannyasi. So interesting. Imagine I come to you and I say, like, you say, Jai Maharaj, welcome. And I say, you know what? I'm not a sannyasi. And it's like, what do you mean? You're a sannyasi? Yes, but I'm not a sannyasi. So what you are then? So, Gopi Bhartu Pada Kamala Yor Dasa Dasa Anadasa. That's why. Sannyasi is a secondary designation. It's not my ultimate identity. So we are all here, hopefully, trying to attain this Dasa Dasa Anadasa state. That's the main thing. Whether Grihastha, Sannyasa, Brahma, that's a situation that may fit our nature in one way or another. Whatever fits your nature better, great. Establish yourself there and dasa, dasa, no das. That's the main thing. If it works better as a sannyasi, go there. If it works better as a grihastha, kijai. That's the same. There's no difference, as we will see from some quotes that I will share with you. So I would say that's why Mahaprabhu will say, I'm not a sannyasi. No. Even telling to us sannyasis, hey, guys, don't get too over-identified with that saffron. No. Ultimately, this renounce order needs to increase and improve your dasa, dasa, no das state. So if we have this proper vision, this proper perspective, again, we can engage everything in the service of Bhagavan. Bhaktivinoda Thakur himself will say, interestingly, in his Sharanagati, not only that the house is not a bad place, but he says that when you properly engage in bhakti, your house becomes the spiritual world. He says that in Saranagati 3:31:6, just in case. He says, whenever a devotee engages in bhajan, at home, the home becomes golok. He says, grihete goloka bhai. Of course, some of us say, we are not bhakti, not Thakur. Okay, I accept that. Nobody, all of us together may not make a Bhaktivinoda Thakur still, but he's shown that in principle that's possible. At least we know in principle that's possible. So we shouldn't dismiss that possibility. As we know, Bhaktivinoda Thakur himself remained at home for the most part of his life. He accepted Babaji Vesh just the very last years, but before that he will say things like this, my house is a golok. I have a darshan of Bhagavan here. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur himself many times will make this point clear over and over again. Whether you are renouncing, whether you are at home, Grihe Thako Vane Thako Sadahari Boli Thako. He will sing his famous Kai Gora Madhu. Sorry. Whether you are Grihe Thako, residing at home in your Griha, or Vane Thako, or in the forest as they're renounced, Sada Hari Bole. Just continue chanting Hari, Kirtaniya Sada Hari. That's important thing. Again, bhakti is important thing. Ashram is to assist our engagement in bhakti. So let me share one quote from Bhaktivinoda Thakur, very beautiful, coming from his Sajjan Tochani, the magazine he will publish. Very simple, very clear, very common sense, which sometimes common sense is not so common. I call that common sense uncommon sense, because it's in danger of extinction, so we need to reclaim it back. So he says like this: if the home is favorable for a devotee's devotional service, then he should not leave. For this reason, Srivas Pandit did not leave home. Srivas Pandit is, he's hosting Mahaprabhu every night eternally in his house at Srivas Sangha for Kirtan every night. That Kirtan is the parallel version of Rasa Lila and Gaur Lila at his Grihastha. He remained in Grihastha all his life. And Mahaprabhu went there, goes there every night forever. So, and then he says, but when the home becomes unfavorable for one's service, one then becomes eligible to leave home. And of course, you shouldn't take this lightly and just, okay, have the excuse to run away. I had a little problem with my wife and I have the support of Bhaktivinoda Thakur here. Please don't take this out of context. And he said, for this reason, Swarup Damodar took sannyas. So he's giving another example from Gaur Lila. All genuine devotees have remained either at home or in the forest due to this consideration. Again, what's favorable? In other words, for a devotee to remain a householder or to become a sannyasi is the same thing. Bhaktivinoda Thakur ki jai. So here's not saying here to be a sannyasi is a better thing, is superior. At one point, you have to leave your house. Same for a devotee. Grihastha ashram, sannyasa ashram is the same. Because the concern of the devotee is devotion. So whatever helps me more in my seva, that's a high gift thing, basically. The priority in the Grihastha ashram is the same priority as in any other ashram, which is bhakti. Ideally, our priority as sannyasis should be bhakti. Your priority as grihastha should be bhakti. So we are on the same page. If bhakti is not our priority, then an ashram stops being an ashram. Ashram means shelter. So an ashram is a shelter as long as bhakti remains our priority. And bhakti is no longer the priority, whether it is grihastha ashram or monastic ashram, the shelter stops becoming shelter because we are leaving the shelter. We are misunderstanding the purpose of the Varna ashram, which is to facilitate the experience of bhakti. So I think it's also important to have to bear that in mind. So from that connection, there is no need to change our present social situation. Srimad Bhagavatam says that this is 10th canto, also the prayers of Brahma. Gyane prayasa mudapasya namanta eva jivanti sammukharitam bhavadiya vartam stanestita sritigatam tanumarvanovi ya prayasa jitajito piyasitra istiloki. Stanestita, says Brahmadar. Stanestita, he's speaking about bhakti, and stanestita means remaining in your social position. So you can engage in bhakti, serve Krishna, attain perfection. Stanestita. Yeah. Remaining wherever you are in the social dynamics. So, as we can see, contemporary, not only the Bhagavad Gita, not only the Bhagavatam Shastra in general, but contemporary acharyas like Bhaktivinoda Thakur clearly emphasize this point. And some might say, okay, Maharaj, but Bhaktivinoda Thakur was mostly Grihastha, so probably he had a particular take on it. But what about, renunciants like Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur? He was a nice Tikka Brahmachari. He was never married. Maybe he has stronger words about the Grihastha ashram than Bhaktivinoda Thakur. Okay, let's see what Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur has to say. Someone who never left the saffron, so to say, throughout his whole life. I will share two quotes from him, just in case. So first one, he says, family life is favorable for devotees because when a devotee enters family life, he enters a temple. For a devotee, there is no difference between entering household life and entering renounced life. there's a huge difference between attached materialists entering household life and the household life of a devotee. And the second quote, just to reach our conclusion, and if you have more questions, if family life is favorable to the cultivation of Krishna consciousness, then it is acceptable and praiseworthy. Not only acceptable, but praiseworthy. If it's unfavorable, then family life, which is compared to a dark well, in that case, should be rejected. I mean, what should be rejected is the mundanality of that. There is no difference between devotees living at home or at the mat, at the monastery, because in either case, they are constantly engaged in the Lord's service. There's a famous lecture of Bhaktisiddhanta Sarvaita called Griha Pravesh, and he made when a couple of his disciples were entering into their new home, he made that clear. No, this is not just a home. This is a temple. This is a sacred space. You agree, Kunja? Yeah. Yeah, she seems happy with that. So the dark well of material family life is the dark well of selfishness and exploitation. It's not family life. It's just being selfish and disconnected from Krishna. That's the dark well. And if you are a monk disconnected from Krishna, you are living the dark well of monastic life. You can find dark wells everywhere. Really? Really? So basically, that's a conclusion. No? A conclusion that I want to make today clear, hopefully clear enough, is that not only bhakti in family life is not mundane, not only it's possible, not only it's even favorable for those, of course, who had that nature, which happened to be 99.9% of the human population. I know I'm a weird 0.01 person here, so I know I'm weird enough. Okay, what to do? That's what came in this lifetime. So that's a very important point. No? Not only to make it clear, family life is not something bad. Family life is good. It can be favorable. And we will be serving family life for eternity. Remember my point that I made before. So in that sense, it's important that instead of rejecting, again, thinking this is bad, I have to leave this place at some point, I had to get detached, I had to reject, instead trying to integrate, trying to connect everything with bhakti. That's the nature and the grace of bhakti, that it can extend to every nook and corner of our daily life. And trying to integrate our human life, daily life, whether as grihasthas or as sannyasis. Daily life has its ups and downs. We have our emotional turmoils, and human life is there. We shouldn't be ashamed of that or embarrassed because of that. That's part of what makes us devotees also, no? Humans. We want to be. We don't want to stop being humans to be devotees. No? Krishna doesn't want that. He doesn't want us just transcendentalists and with half-baked humanity, dysfunctional in our humanity, and superhero performers in a spiritual level. He wants wholeness, not only holiness, but wholeness, no? Integration. And this is not a challenge also only for grihasthas, also for me, as a sannyasi, for any monk. I need to know what to do with my emotions, with my humanity. It's not that being a sannyasi means I have no emotions. No? God forbid, please. No. Can I have friends, Namrata? Yes, okay. Another private joke with Namrata. Friend of Namrata once thought that said to him that sannyasis cannot have friends. So he told that to me, and I was almost faint, basically. Nobody told me that when they gave me sannyasis.
Why?
I need friends. Sorry?
Why he said
that? No, someone told him that they heard that sannyasis were not supposed to have friends. Like this idea probably that the sannyasi is too transcendental for friendship. And that's like, that's not my idea of transcendence.
Can I clarify the...
Please.
So I was going to Navadvip, and someone was coming from Mayapur, another sannyasi. And he said, where are you going from the other boat? He said, where are you going? I said, we'll go see a friend. He's like, who? And I said, this so-and-so Maharaj. He said, sannyasi can't be your friend. They don't have friends or something like that. I was like, okay, Maharaj, sure. And then when I told Maharaj that years later, this is the point that came forward.
That was the first point he made in the first podcast we recorded together. Oh,
right.
That was some good point. I appreciate that it being, because in one sense, it also shows how some people may think, and maybe sometimes even how sannyasis may think. Okay, now I'm a sannyasi, so I'm not supposed to have friends. No, I'm supposed to be a superhero for the community, perfect in every way, although I'm not perfect, but I have to fake like I'm perfect. So everyone is inspired with me faking perfection. It's like, that doesn't sound too inspiring. So I think it's important that we ground ourselves in our humanity and we try to accept and embrace that and make that offerable also to Krishna. It's not trying to bypass being humans in the name of being transcendental. That doesn't work. No, please.
I think the confusion could be that, you know, we hear like so many times that, you know, we use word renunciate like the sannyasi. Then we also talk about how, you know, with the example where like sannyasi, they left the family and then they're like, they are dead into the society, right? So I think those examples, when we hear, even I have the same conception, right? That when a sannyasi is dead to the society, we maybe see it in a physical sense, not in a metamorphic sense. I don't know, but I mean, yeah, I understand what I'm trying to say, because that's not the, you know, like, perception we have of a sannyasi. Well, I struggled with that.
Yeah.
Is it that like sannyasis or brahmacharis like to be more friends with, you know, other sannyasis and brahmacharis, or, you know, I don't know. Do sannyasis, do they like to interact so much with like grihasthas, because it's like different? So I don't know.
Do you have any grihastha friends?
Am I your friend? Can I have friends? Can you have sannyasi friends? Tulsi, you allow him to have sannyasi friends?
Absolutely.
As long as the sannyasi is not trying to convince him to become sannyasi. I'm not the type of sannyasi, you know.
Sorry to interject.
No, it's okay. Yeah, I mean, personally, I'm talking for me. I cannot talk for every other sannyasi, but I will say that that's a healthy openness, not to relate. Again, I personally try not to make that much of a difference. Of course, sannyasis and grihasthas may be different in some things, but in one sense, we have more things in common than the differences. No? Like our ideals, we're humans, we are devotees. We share so much in common, and trying to emphasize what makes us different, for me, is superficial. Mm-hmm. No? And I know that sometimes that has happened, and many times sannyasis are kind of put in a type of like pedestal, bubble, isolated, like over above the whole pyramid, and that's not healthy. And I've seen many sannyasis not being able to sustain themselves because they remain so isolated. They don't have even friends. They don't have to whom share as equals, as peers, because they're on the top of the chain food, so to say. And everyone else is down, like Kijai, Maharaj, Kijai, Kijai. And that's an overdose of Kijai. Like you drown in that. And you may be having your struggles or your things you'd like to share, like in confidence and friendship, and there are no friends, everyone's. So I don't think that's healthy. So
you're right, because there's a valid point you're making, because, you know,
in general, I'm talking. I'm not saying everyone is.
No, you're right. Because, you know, me and, you know, my wife, we discussed this. Like, whenever we hear stories about some, you know, something happening around those lines, you know, because I think we are the people who put everyone up in the pedestal, you say, and then they make one mistake and then they're crashing down, right? So it's not healthy. And there were stories, one in Bhakti Center too, there was a case where, you know, this happened, then the whole Bhakti Center almost collapsed. Like, a lot of people lost faith because they're put in, as you say, like, into a pedestal, like, and then something happened, and they're like, now what? We never expected, right?
Yeah.
And the person is high up there, he's isolated so much that there's no way he can, you know, even he has some feeling he can't even say, because then he had to keep that image, right? Which is a fake image, and it's not good for anyone. No, I think.
Fake it till you make it, as they say, right?
Yes.
I don't think that's healthy, and I personally feel that that type of template has to be replaced, and that's a big part of my last book is about that, about trying to rethink how we can make our practice and presentation more realistic and more sustainable. I mean, I don't think that if your faith is more nourished, by me faking perfection, what type of faith are you culturing? That's a very external, superficial faith. So for me, a deeper faith is that you learn to see me as a sannyasi, as a human being, who has human issues as you have, as a sannyasi, but I'm still a human being. And we can talk about those things. We can relate and we can be open and vulnerable in sharing that without the need to putting you there, putting me down, putting you up. I think for me, that's more, for me, it's more inspiring. No? For me, it's not inspiring that someone is perfect and it's like, you cannot see any defect or anything. For me, it's more inspiring if someone says, I'm having this struggle, but I'm honest about it and I'm opening. Wow, that's Guhyama Kyati Pritcha Tila, Rupa Goswami will say. We are revealing the mind in confidence. If not, it becomes performative, very performative, and it's unsustainable. And people may have good intentions, but if you sign up for that superficial template, in time it's unsustainable, and the things you try to, like, to keep the facade, so to say, in time affects the faith more and more. And as you were saying, Shigatad Prabhu, like, we very easily or cheaply sometimes are taught to over idealize people, but that also translates in quickly, boom. No? Instead of the opposite, which is to learn to properly appreciate everyone for who they are in a realistic way, even if someone is not as high, but is struggling sincerely, probably that will be a deeper appreciation. And if when they have a problem, hopefully not, but if that happens, my faith won't collapse because it's more realistic and under understand we are all in this journey and we are sharing different struggles and we are in this together and let's accompany each other. For me, at least, it sounds more human, realistic, sustainable. and of course, it's challenging because it invites us to be more honest, more vulnerable, more transparent to each other. And I think we need a big dose of that in general. Again, I'm not pointing at one group and at one people. It's just like a general idea. Now, Rusty, you have something to add?
Yeah, like I've heard that when you see a sannyasi or you pay obeisances because you're honoring their sannyas. Have you heard that before?
Yeah.
So
mostly people pay obeisance because they heard that if they do not, they have to fast the rest of the day. So I would say a big part of the motivation is they're hungry and they don't want to fast. But yeah.
So, and I know you're saying that, you know, not necessarily one is higher than the other, but is it a cultural thing that makes the sannyasi, like, in some ways higher than the grahastha because of their renunciation? Or does it have to do with bhakti? Or does, I know it doesn't have to do with bhakti, but there's a cultural aspect there that,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
We also honoring that they're taking like a path that's like more difficult.
More difficult. Yeah, that's a good
you
point.
Know?
I wouldn't say my path is more difficult. I mean, I'm staying at Navras house for the last 10 days and
the grass is always greener on the other side.
It's difficult.
Right? Like, I'm going to work 8 hours a day, right? Or we're all going to work 8 hours a day. And you are, like, studying.
I'm just sitting and you are working and entertaining.
You're immersed, right?
Hopefully. That's the idea. But sorry?
There are many family ties also to drop off, pick up, make food, drop them to school, make them study.
But my point, let me,
that
yeah.
That takes up the time which sannyasi can use in this.
Let me clarify a few points. Yeah, thank you. But my point is that dropping kids at school and cooking and cleaning your house, all that can be bhakti. Mm-hmm. It's not that that's not bhakti. That's a point important that sometimes I've seen the book telling me, Maharaj, but I have my material life and all this stuff and my spiritual life. That's wrong. You are creating a difference. You are creating a dichotomy. If you want to create that duality, it's your problem. It's your choice. But bhakti, all that can be bhakti. Jiva Goswami speaks about Swarup Siddha Bhakti and about Sangha Siddha Bhakti. Swarup Siddha Bhakti means activities which are inherently bhakti, like kirtan, sadhu sangha, sadhim, bhagavat. All that's bhakti. So whether you do that knowing about bhakti or not, you are being blessed. And there are sangha siddha bhakti, which means actions which are not inherently bhakti, like taking kids to school or peeling potatoes or taking a shower. That's not bhakti. If that will be bhakti, everyone is already enlightened in the whole planet. Everyone is doing that every day. But that can become bhakti if you connect those practices with your devotional life. So raising your kids requires absorption, dedication, investment of time and energy. That's not necessarily a diversion from your spiritual life. If you do that with a proper consciousness, that's part of your bhakti. Like the famous case of this disciple of Srila Prabhupada, she just got a baby and she was suffering because she was not able to finish her 16 rounds with a 1-2 week old baby. And Prabhupada came and said, "Why are you crying so much?" I says, "Like, because I cannot finish my 16 rounds." Prabhupada say, "But you had a baby, right?" Again, uncommon sense, right? "You had a baby, right?" He said, "Yes, 2 weeks ago. Here's your rounds." Before, you have to have common sense. And my point he made with this, I'm not saying with this stop chanting rounds, he's saying taking care of your baby is part of bhakti, it's your bhakti now. So I think it's important that we learn to integrate all the things. One thing, sorry, because there were like three commenters and I want to address a few points, but I'm going to, you mentioned the thing of this respect to the sannyasi. And of course, there is a place to respecting a sannyasi, but also there's a place to respect a grihastha. Why not? If you are a proper sannyasi, all glories to you, Maharaj. If you're a proper grihastha, all glories to you. I mean, we are offering respect to, again, to the bhakti. Ultimately, we're offering respect to the bhakti. Or even if there is no bhakti, let's take it even further, the Srimad Bhagavatam says you should offer respect to every living entity, even to a dog, you should fall in Dandavat, because Krishna is in their heart. If you want to take it even further, you should offer respect to everything, not even human beings. So that's a culture of respect. Amanina manadina. Sunichina sahishnuna. It's not just, oh, sannyasi is coming. Okay, it's time to offer respect to someone. It should be a natural code on a daily basis, even between husband and wife, keep parents and children reciprocal, not only in one direction. But yeah, sometimes because of whatever cultural influences or other things, it becomes like more like, okay, only the sannyasis are to be respected. And again, a sannyasi has time to study and do other things. But again, that doesn't make me better than those who do not have that much time to study. To be honest, I mean, I'm trying hopefully to be a sannyasi, a good sannyasi, but you can also use the ashram as a spiritual bypassing or like a comfort zone. Like other people is maintaining you, you are not making too much effort, too much sacrifice. It can become a comfort. It shouldn't. Like grihastha is not comfort zone. If you are really a good grihastha, you are working, there is sacrifice there. Sannyasi should be exposed to their own challenges in a healthy way. But it can become a comfort zone. As grihastha can become grihamedi and become a comfort zone. So I will say that the healthiest scenario is that everyone is appreciating each other. No? Okay, now Rasami, I appreciate, okay, Maharaj, you are studying. Nice, I appreciate that. And I'm saying, and you are really dedicated to your three kids and with lots of empathy and presence and sacrifice. And I have to have presence and sacrifice in my own way as a sannyasi. So that's why every time I come here, I stay at their house because they invite me first, but second, because for me, it's a lesson to witness that. It's like, okay, wow. Every day, 365 days a year, 24/7. That's intense. But I'm seeing they are doing that. And I don't want to make this exclusive praise of a couple, but I'm just saying it's inspiring for me as a sannyasi to renew my vows, so to say, to look at my own sannyasi, say, okay, I'm doing this, I'm having the same type of dedication, self-forgetfulness. Because it's like, grihastha, you're with the kids, you're not the center. You have to forget about you. You have to, right? So yeah, it's potentially an udipana, no? Like a stimulant for one's own. So I would say a healthy scenario would be mutual respect and appreciation for each other. And one last thing before going to your point regarding what you mentioned about having friends. I don't like to create too much difference between sannyasis and grihastas, like two different species or something like that. They talk two different languages. Of course, they have different lifestyles, but I don't think we cannot become friends. I mean, I have lots of grihasta friends. Men, I have women who are friends. I know that for some people that may be like, you cannot have a woman friend. Well, I don't believe in that. I think I have friends, Vaishnavi friends, in a legal way, in a proper way, as a sannyasi, have friendship with ladies, with men, with grihastas, with brahmacharis, with sannyasis. I don't want to live in my friendship. Now, you ultimately want to be friends of the whole world, basically, right? Actually, sannyasis to be meant that. I don't have a family, but the whole world became my family. You know, that's what the Vedas say, Vasudhaiva Kutumbakam. There's only one family. So, sorry.
It's not a separate point.
Sorry.
Because I just wanted to share my perspective. I wasn't raised in Krishna consciousness, and I joined when I was 27 already. And for me to pay basics to sannyasis was a cultural thing at first, and it developed in me the sense of respect. And then years later, when I came back to my hometown, I saw senior Vaishnavas, and I just automatically just fell on the floor because I was so happy to see them. And they were male, grihastas male, so I couldn't just run and hug them. So my expression of affection and respect was just like fall on the floor and pay obeisances, and they did the same. So I guess it's in a context, it's a different cases.
And the important thing will be whatever the external form it takes, that there is some. Again, the offering of respect, in my opinion, shouldn't be just a mere formality, but should be coming from a genuine place of appreciation and affection, and not so much like fear, oh, Maharaj is coming, I have to fall to the ground because he's carrying the danda, who knows what may happen. He seems a little bit moody today, maybe he's not on the best day, I don't want to fast, I want to, no, those are not the ideal motivations to do that. It should come from a natural place if I want to offer us respect. No, what to speak of demanding respect? That shouldn't happen. No, like, hey, I'm Maharaj. Why are you not on the floor right now? Things like that. No, that's a problem when you start to become like addict to that. And it's a delicate situation. I remember talking with Sachinanda Maharaj, and he mentioned that. Yeah, like I'm entering a room and I have like 300 people on the floor, you can go crazy in a second. No, if you are not properly like situated about what's going on here and realizing that you ultimately it's not about me, no, and then probably you go yourself to the floor to also counteract the 300 that are coming to you. So to keep your mind sane, because so as long as it comes from a place of love and affection, and Mahaprabhu himself was a sannyasi, and he will have very intimate connection with devotees, no? Who were not sannyasis. No? Most of his intimate associates were not sannyasis. One of his four intimate associates was Madhavi Devi, a woman. No? So he was, my point is, he as a sannyasi and he's Krishna giving the example as an acharya. You can be a sannyasi and you can have intimate, close associates being ladies, being grihastas, being brahmacharis, being sannyasis, of course, as well. Here's one question that Pranada is making. Say, why do the devotees take sannyas then?
Good question.
So why do I accept sannyas? Personally, I will say basically, again, sannyas has more to do with the nature. Acquiring that you have a certain nature that fits your psyche, so to say. That's what Varnashram is about, basically. Varnashram is locate yourself in the social, psychosocial scheme and find a place where you are stable and balanced and you can live your life with sattva. But you are not in too much anxiety, like this is not my place, this is not my vocation, my work, my order. So for someone, like if someone has a nature of having family life, eventually you have to officialize that by taking the vow of marriage, which, I mean, it's a lifelong vow in most cases. So similarly, sannyasi is a way of saying, okay, I've been single for some time over a monk, and sannyasi is a way of reinforcing that same particular nature and offering of service from that particular place. So that's how I personally live it. But again, I'm not thinking you need to do that at some point. You can be a grihastha. Hopefully that was clear enough from today's presentation. You can be a grihastha. And I mean, I'm not saying this to like to flatter you excessively. Like, no, you remain whatever. I mean, you have also your challenges and you have to do your own change and transformation and growth and sacrifice and go deep. Like any other devotee in any other ashram has to do also. Again, it's not that just by being merely being a sannyasi, I'm saved in one sense. No, it's not like I don't have to do anything. So everyone has to do what they have to do. Life will make it clear what we need to work on today, tomorrow, and so on. But hopefully the main point was clear that the family life is an ashram, it's a shelter. So you can live that experience with gratitude and with joy and celebration, and not just, I'll give you a very bizarre example just to conclude that I was told, I couldn't believe it when I heard it. A few Prabhupada disciples, friends of mine, they told me that at their time, when not everyone, but when some devotees will get married, they will bring as a gift a rope, on a light, I would say a lantern.
Lighter?
Like a lantern, the light that you use when it's dark.
Flashlight?
A flashlight, yeah. Flashlight on a rope. Mm. And I was like, for what? I said, because you have fallen into the dark well. We are laughing not to cry. Because they were doing that seriously. I mean, those were the marriage souvenirs or something like, okay, here you have your rope, here you have it. Welcome to the dark well. No? So that's terrific orient. Imagine you are entering that station of life with that negative orientation. Okay, mm-hmm. I'm entering into a dark well now of entanglement and illusion. How dysfunctional will be the way you raise your kids and treat your wife? And no wonder, with all respect, but if you study the history of many of those marriages, most of them failed. Mm-hmm. Not because they had bad intention or anything, but there was an orientation which was not mature enough and too much overemphasizing renunciation and detachment and neglecting certain human elements that need to be properly integrated. Mm-hmm. So here sharing some words in trying gradually to redeem that paradigm and we can have a more healthy and sustainable experience in grihastha. Yeah.
I just wanted to share something that enlightened me very much just lately, because I'm a housewife and I also work not 8 hours a day, but I just work as soon as I wake up and I stop working when I'm going to sleep. And I was getting that feeling that all this work just taking all my life away and spiritual life just goes somewhere on the side. And I'm just doing this work and doing it every day and doing it every day. But where's my spiritual life? And then we went to the class of our Guru Maharaj and he said that for grihasthas, the dharma and responsibility is their austerity. And that's when I felt relieved. Mm-hmm. I was like, oh, so I'm doing austerity actually every day. So my spiritual life not on the hold all this time.
Exactly.
So it was very helpful.
Yeah.
To just get the right perspective.
Exactly. And I appreciate that because sometimes it's just a matter of right perspective. It sounds like a few words that you hear and everything like fits from another angle. But until and unless we have that, we may be practicing for decades with the wrong perspective. And that creates so much, that can create potentially so much anxiety and embarrassment, fear, shame, guilt, all this parade of emotions that are totally avoidable if we have the right perspective. So I think it's very important that we get the right perspective about everything so we can practice bhakti from the right place, basically. And again, sometimes what we need to change is not so much what we are doing, but the perspective we are having regarding what we are doing. And it's so important to spend some time in that. I call it sambandha. That's sambandha. Sambandha, videya, and prayojan. So sambandha is the knowledge that orients our perspective, that informs how to do things. Avideya is the doing of the things, and Prayojana is the fruit of the doing of the things. But if the sambandha, the orientation to our actions is wrong, the actions will be performed from a dysfunctional place, and the fruit will be very bitter. And it all depends on sambandha. It all depends on how we are orienting our action, how we are conceiving what we are doing. So sometimes in our life, we feel that something we are doing is being felt as bad, wrong, entangled, dark well, or whatever the case. In some cases, we may need to stop some of those things, but in some cases, we may just need to acquire the proper perspective. Not necessarily need to leave that, no? Now, I'll conclude with this famous quote that once a devotee came to Srila Bhakti Rakshaksidhar Dev Goswami Maharaj, and he asked Guru Maharaj, famous quote, he's asking, Guru Maharaj, can you give me some service? And this devotee came, had this very simplistic, naive idea, oh, Guru Maharaj will tell me to go and wash pots or whatever, cook something or clean something. But no, Srila Sri Maharaj gave service. So he said, can you give me service? And Srila Sri Maharaj said, yes. Change your angle of vision. That was his reply. That was the service. Change the perspective. Again, change your angle of vision. That's the service I give. That's your constant service. And even when you, another implication, when you change your angle of vision, you need, I don't need even to ask for service because everything that comes is opportunities of service. So I think that's an important thing. No? Change our angle of vision. Paradigm shifts. And sometimes they are very important because sometimes we get stuck in our way of understanding things, our biases and assumptions, taking Krishna consciousness for granted. This is this. Yeah, I know what this is. Yeah, I heard that many. And we get stuck there and we don't change angle of vision. We don't change perspective. And that many times makes us stagnant, stuck in practice. Many times when we feel I'm stuck in my practice, probably it's because I'm not willing to change, I'm not open to change my angle. I'm not working on that. So it's important to keep that muscle exercise. Always open to change from different, be willing to see reality from new places. Yeah. Hopefully today's presentation was part of that shifting and so on. Okay, so we can conclude here. Something else? Yeah, please.
Just, I guess I'm trying to fit in my head like this idea of like Vaishnava. Like I feel like that's something that I don't have a good understanding of all the time, and I wonder how this fits in when you talk about, like, you know, the there should be some level of formality, I guess, I don't know, like proper behavior when it comes to, you know, dealing with other Vaishnavas at different ashrams. I'm just curious how you see that, because sometimes there's a lot of informality that is actually not always maybe appropriate.
Yeah. Well, Vaishnava etiquette is a whole conversation. No. I'm not saying it's a different topic. It's a whole big conversation that is more very important. I remember a few years ago, I would give like a series of lectures, right? Like 25 classes or something. But what I like to emphasize in connection to your question, that sometimes it's also misunderstood, is that Vaishnava etiquette is not all about formalities. No? Vaishnava etiquette, the essence of Vaishnava etiquette is affection between devotees. Whatever rules that you follow are to facilitate heart connection. It's not just a bunch of formalities that you need to learn to be perfect and do the correct thing to pass the test. Because sometimes we may become like very much attached to that performing. It's a performative thing. But Vaishnava etiquette is mostly about pleasing the Vaishnava. No? And that's not informality. No? I think these three things. You have formality, you have informality, and you have affectionate, intimate, deep interaction. So there is a place for formality. I'm not against that, although I'm not the most formal follower of formal. I identify more with Srila Sri Maharaj. I will say he's a form breaker. But one thing, we can offer formal respect to someone. That doesn't mean that we are offering substantial respect to that person. That's two different things. For example, you can see a sannyasi and you can just, okay, Jai Maharaj, you offer formal respect. But at the same time, you know that there are some things about that person, hopefully not, but just an example, that you deeply disagree with. So you cannot really offer your heart to that person, but you offer formal respect, which is okay, but we shouldn't limit Vaishnava etiquette to just a formal offering of respect, because if not, we keep our whole, many times, relationships on a formal level. And we are mostly afraid of not committing offense or failing to offer the formal respect. And we don't go deeper than that. You follow my point? So personally, my personal opinion is, I'm trying to emphasize, okay, there is a formality to Vaishnava etiquette. By Vaishnava etiquette, ultimately, it's about fourth verse of Upadeshamrita, let's say. Sadvidam Pratilakshanam. We talked the other day in your house, what sadhu sangha? Dadati pratigrinati guhyamankyati prichati bhunkti bojati cheva. Giving and receiving gifts, giving and receiving prasad, revealing the mind, hope, opening our hearts to other Vaishnava, receiving their open hearts, about intimacy, about depth, about affection, about love. That's the Vaishnava etiquette. If Vaishnava etiquette is not facilitating that, Vaishnava etiquette is an anartha. Really? Sorry, I'm using strong words, but just to make the point. If in the name of Vaishnava etiquette, we're just becoming formal and calculative and afraid and doing everything superficially, what's that? That's not satsanga. That's asatsanga. In the name of satsanga, we are just creating a facade. So Vaishnava etiquette, again, there are different codes and rules, but the spirit behind them is to please others, to connect deeply from heart to heart, not just to be attached, to be seen as a nice boy, nice girl, so nobody can tell me anything. I'm checking all the boxes, so I'm good. Don't be angry with me. More from a place of fear. No, like, I want to do it right, because if not, this will happen. No? You follow my point? So if you are deeply affectionate and open to, willing to do that, you are fulfilling the essence of Vaishnava etiquette. Mm-hmm. Again, there may be some formal respect, like Mahaprabhu will offer formal respect to Ramachandra Puri, although Ramachandra Puri criticized him for things that he was not doing. But okay, he's a senior, he's a god brother of my Gurudev. Although internally he knew what's going on, but he kept that. But there was no intimate connection. There was not the possibility of that, because Ramachandra Puri was not up for that. But with those who were up for that, Mahaprabhu related to them in very intimate terms, you know, embracing each other, feeding each other, decorating each other. That was the Vaishnava etiquette on that level. Just decorating each other, loving each other, and very deep, very sweet, very affectionate. And I will say that that's what we want, and that's what we need to counteract sometimes many layers of formality and superficiality that get in the way of deep connection. And if there is no deep connection, we lose taste for the practice. We become weak. We feel isolated. We don't feel in family and communion. And that's not what Prabhupada and our acharyas want, right? So I will try to concentrate my emphasis on Vaishnava etiquette in that direction, right? Yeah, you come and offer obeisances to me because I'm a sannyasi, but I'm more interested in what happens after the obeisances. Like, let's sit together, let's get to know each other, let's develop some friendly connection and friends. And okay, that's for me the main thing. And when that happens, I'm no longer expecting your obeisances. I will go straight and will embrace you. When you are going to the floor, no, come here. That's a way of saying it. Again, I'm not saying everyone should do like I'm doing. I'm just giving an example of how. Yeah. I hope that makes sense.
Yeah?
Yeah? Okay. Thank you. Something else before concluding? Questions, sharing, commentaries?
We can have discussion over prasadam as well.
Mm-hmm. Sorry again?
We can have discussion over prasadam as well.
Yeah, of course.
It's getting a little bit late, right?
Yeah. Let's conclude here then. Sri Sri Jagannath Balai Subhadraji ki jai, Sri Man Mahaprabhu ki jai, Sri Sri Gornita ki jai, Sri Prabhupada ki jai, Sri Radhanath Maharaj ki jai, Sri Guru Parampara ki jai, Sadhu Sangha ki jai, Gaur Premananda
ki jai, Sri Padma Maharaj ki jai,
Vancha Kalpataru Vishya Kripa Sindhu Pyeva Chapti Tanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namah. Ananta Koti Vaishnava Vrinda Ki Jai Gaur Hari Bol.
So as I said, Maharaj has